Okay, we're beginning tape two with Florence Kepo, who came from Spain in 1916. Today is July 4th, Sunday, 1999. As we said before, very hot and humid. You may hear a fan and some traffic on the tape. This is Kepo. We were just beginning to get you to America. Your father and brother are already here. And you just told that wonderful story about writing a letter to your father actually when he was in Argentina.
Yeah, right.
But one thing I did want to ask you, before you came to America, before you got here, what did you know about America?
I knew about the Carrots in Hoosie Falls.
The what?
The rain? No, the
waterfall?
The waterfall.
Like Niagara Falls?
Las Cataratas. We call them Las Cataratas. In English, you say the waterfall. Okay.
Waterfalls. And what waterfalls did you know about?
Well, I knew that they were great big, which I went to twice to look at them. Two different years I went over
How
there.
How did you know that? How did you know that there were waterfalls?
Oh, you studied there. I had an uncle, my mother's brother, oldest brother. That man bought us the latest of all the books that he could find. And I knew all about the Statue of Liberty. I knew about coming into the harbor in New York. I knew about Ellis Island and all those things that was necessary for us to know. He bought these books and he bought the maps and everything so that we could be, alerted from anything that could happen.
So you were very fortunate.
Yes, I was.
Had he ever been in America?
No. He was very sure in Spain, people, we were very behind in everything. And he could have glasses. If he had been in this country, he could have glasses. Like you're wearing.
Eyeglasses.
And in there was no way that my uncle could get glasses. He was a poor man, and he didn't have any way of getting eyeglasses.
That's too bad.
It was too bad, because he was a very interesting man. He was short-sighted and very smart, very self-educated, although not completely, because his cousin, Tomás, who became a very noted school teacher in Madrid. When he came to town for the vacation during the summer, him and my uncle used to study all the time. And he showed my uncle an awful lot. Yeah. And he, in return, he showed us my brother, my sister, and I. So I knew a whole lot about America before we came here.
Had you ever seen anybody who had been to America and came back to Spain?
Not that I can think of.
Did your family have anybody who had gone to America before your father did?
Yes, my father's cousin.
Who was here.
They built that factory there in Argentina.
But what about in America?
In
North America?
No. Because of the language, you see. Because of the language. There was all Spanish, and here was all English.
Right.
And that was very inconvenient, let's put it that way.
I didn't even ask you before, what was your schooling? Did you go to school in Spain at all? How much schooling did you have in Spain?
I believe that if I compare myself, I was way up in high school. Because of my uncle, my mother's brother. That man knew everything.
Was this the same uncle who gave you the books about New York? Oh, I see.
Yeah. That man would come to our house every single night after he did his duty in the fields over there. And he would teach us. He bought us the most latest books that came out and all the maps and everything that go with it. And I knew a great deal about America. Yes.
He was probably thankful to have someone to share his enthusiasm.
And you know,
with.
When he died, the poor man, he died, you know what, building coffins for the poor people. Yeah, he was a kind man, very, very well informed about everything. And he was doing everything he could to show us what was right and what was wrong.
Well, it's a shame that he never was able to get an education.
Well, being poor is pretty hard.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard. If he had had some funds that he could have good eyeglasses, he'd have been a very, very helpful man. Yeah. He was never married. He was a single man. Yeah, and he ended building coffins for the poor people.
What was his name?
Aquilino.
Aquilino?
Aquilino.
Aquilino.
Yeah.
Was there anything that you expected to see in America? You knew
yes.
that you were going to see these
yeah.
things, but was there something that you were...
He said to us, the first thing you're going to see is the Statue of Liberty as you go into the harbor. About New York Harbor. Okay. Okay, as you come in into the harbor, you leave the Statue of Liberty to your left. Right? Okay. And the other side, you see... do you see Ellis Island from there? I don't know whether you do it or not. All I know is that we got to New York early in the morning. We had lunch aboard ship. And from there, they took us on a ship to Ellis Island. And there, it wasn't quite time. We were still close. So I can show you at the stairs where we were sitting out in front of the building. There's three arches. That's where we went in, through the middle door. That's through the ones that I came out. Got a board ship that was almost missed to come to Springfield. Get the train to come to Springfield. Yes, we almost missed it.
Well, good, we'll talk more about that when we get you to New York. What did your mother have to do before she could leave Spain? What had to be done before the family could actually leave?
She sold everything that we had. We had cows, not cows exactly, bulls, to work the land. We had sheep, we had goats, we had pigs, we had the eggs had to be, you know, they were home from our chickens. And you sold, because you had so many chickens, you had too many eggs, so you would sell the eggs to get some money. And your pigs, if you had a pig that you can raise some more pigs, well, you had the little pigs to sell, and there was money coming in also. And what else?
What about paperwork or anything like that?
Paperwork?
Yeah. Did you have to get passports or?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Where did you go to do that?
To Ayuntamiento de Polientes y Reynosa. There's two different cities where you can get, where you vote. You go to Polientes, you go to vote in there. And to Reynosa, you get all these, the government things that you need. Reynosa, another village, bigger and that has banks and all. Polientes doesn't have banks.
Do you remember any of that process yourself?
Yes.
Yeah? Does anything stick out in your mind?
Of what?
About going to these places to get the paperwork.
Polientes had a market every week, every weekend, every Saturday. There was a una plaza, where you go and you take your wheat, or you take your chickens, and you take your eggs, and you sell them. There's money coming into the house. Okay. In Reynosa, you have your banking. Okay, if you got any money in the bank, there's where you have it, in Reynosa. And there, there's a great big plaza. You know what a plaza means?
Like a piazza, like an open space.
Open space where you go and you sell whatever you have. And there, everybody has, not everybody, but some people have, like the tailors, they have their cloth in there lined up. You buy your cloth or whatever you need.
Had you been to these places before?
Yes.
You had?
Yes.
I see.
Yeah.
And
excuse me. And even a merry-go-round in Reynosa. That was the first time I went to a merry-go-round in Reynosa. My cousin that came from Madrid happened to be there, and he says, "Come on, ven, que te voy a poner en el barco para que vayas alrededor en la plaza." Muy bien. Oh God, do I have memories? Do I have memories? I wish I had the pictures that my daughter's got. She took all my pictures that I had from the old country. And she's out in Oklahoma, so if you wanted...
Oh, so you have photographs of when you were in Spain in 19...
Yeah,
growing up.
And when I came
really?
Here, too.
Oh. Did you have to have medical examinations before you left Spain?
No, not that I can remember. No.
Did you have to get your photograph taken before you left
Spain?
Yes,
because you had to have it on your certificate, your birth certificate. Yes.
Do you remember anything about going to have your photograph taken?
Yes, I remember going to Reynosa and have my picture taken. Yeah.
But nothing special?
No, nothing special.
What did your mother or you or your sister pack to take to America?
Clothes. That's all. We only had a suitcase.
One suitcase for all three of you?
The only thing that we took with us, one box of cookies, all kinds of cookies, so we could eat aboard ship in case we got sick, which we did. My mother and I, we got sick. Not so much me, my mother did. And my sister was never sick. She was up and down the ship and those stairs sliding down like mad. She was a tomboy.
So you took a suitcase full of clothes and a box of cookies.
From Madrid.
From Madrid.
We stayed in my aunt's house for a week over there. And from there we went to Cadiz and we sailed from Cadiz.
Before you left your town, was there anyone that you had to say goodbye to?
Hola. Everybody was so nice to us. Say goodbye to us.
Was there any kind of a gathering to say goodbye
to
you?
No, you just say goodbye to them. Yeah, some cry, some didn't cry.
What about your grandparents? Were they living at that time?
Yeah. Yes. I remember my grandmother kissing my sister, and she says to her, with tears in her eyes, I can say.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. She says to her, "I know I'll never see you again." Which was true.
So from
it's
your
so hard.
From your town you went to Madrid?
Yeah.
How did you go to Madrid?
By train.
By train. Does anything stick out in your mind about that ride to Madrid?
Well, you go through a lot of places where you haven't seen before. My aunt was waiting for us at the station. My uncle was a bookkeeper in the railroad station. He saw us coming. He saw the train coming where we were on. And my aunt stayed outside of the station waiting for us.
It's okay, take your time. These memories are very strong.
Yes, they get you. When you say goodbye to your grandmother and she knows she'll never see you again, it's sad. And my mother's parents were very lovable, very, very lovable. My mother's father was a redhead with a temper like an old Irishman. And my grandmother was so kind. She couldn't give you enough.
Was your grandfather upset too when you left?
I don't remember. I don't remember him being upset. I know my uncle cried. The one that showed me so much stuff.
I'm going to fix your microphone while we're stopped. I just want to put it up a little closer to your voice. Here.
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
Maybe I should have buttoned this here.
Yeah, you know what? So from Madrid, you went to Cadiz.
Cadiz.
Yeah.
Cadiz.
And did you go also by train?
Yes, by train.
And then how long were you there?
We were there in Cadiz.
Yes,
in
Cadiz.
In Madrid.
No, in Cadiz.
In Cadiz, we were there only about a week. In Madrid, we were there longer in my aunt's house.
So it was a visit. You were visiting with your aunt too?
In Madrid, yes.
Yeah.
But not in Cadiz. We had to wait because the ship was there, but it was they were loading it far away from port. We could see the ship at a distance, but it wasn't in a port.
Kind of anchored out.
Yeah, where it was deep, because the water was, it wasn't so deep where by the, near the city.
Right.
Let me put it that way.
And what was the name of the ship?
Barcelona.
Barcelona.
Yeah, Barcelona.
I've interviewed someone else who came on Barcelona.
No kidding.
But at a different crossing. In fact, I think the guy I interviewed in New Britain came on the Barcelona.
It could be, because there were some men.
So I think he left from Cadiz also.
Cadiz too.
Yeah.
From Cadiz.
I'm saying that wrong, right?
Yeah.
I can spell it.
I don't doubt it.
C-A-D-I-Z.
I don't doubt it. But
the accent is on the... I'm
Cadiz.
Saying
Cadiz. Yeah.
I'm saying Cadiz.
Cadiz, right? Yeah.
So you were there a week. What happened in that week that you were there waiting to get on the ship?
Oh God, you go to different places. You travel around the streets, and you see many. You go into lunch rooms and places where you had to stay in at a house, you know, overnight. And I didn't like the food in there. My mother didn't like the food in there either, so we had some lunch rooms outside. And at the same time, we would take a nice walks, the same as we did in Madrid. My aunt was a good cook. Oh, God, she was a good cook. But my aunt couldn't afford it, so my mother had to give her some money. Yeah, my mother had the money because she sold a lot of stuff. She sold the team that we had to work the land with.
Those were the bulls?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And all the other stuff that we had at home, which was an awful lot.
Right.
You needed, I don't know how many dollars you needed to enter the country, and my mother had twice the money or more. Yeah.
So when you finally got on the Barcelona, had you ever been on a big ship before?
No.
No. And how did you get from land, from the dock, to the Barcelona?
With another little ship.
Another little boat took
you
out.
Yeah. Because the big sailboat couldn't get into where we were. Right. It wasn't deep enough.
Right. Shallow harbor.
Yeah.
What did you think when you saw the ship that you were going to be riding on?
All that was explained to us by my uncle. So it was no news to us.
He had prepared you.
Oh, yes. My uncle was a very smart man.
Had he ever been on a big ship before?
I suppose so, in Santander. Because he traveled. He traveled. My uncle traveled. Although he would have done a lot more if he had a pair of glasses.
Tell me what happened when you got on the Barcelona. What was the first thing that you had to do?
Well, the first thing we had to do was to buy a good... We bought them from in Cadiz. They sold us some chairs so that we could sit around, you know, aboard ship. There was nothing to sit in there. We were in third class. My mother was mad when she found out that we were going in third class. My mother said to my father when we got here, "Why did you let us come in third class? when you know we could afford to come in preferencia, tercera preferencia, then we would eat at a table like the humans do. And over there we had to eat on our left.
What were the third class accommodations like?
Nothing. You sleep in a big hole. Just beds, one layer and another layer. And my mother had a whole box of cookies that we bought in Madrid to eat aboard ship, because she said, my aunt says, you're not going to like the food in there, not all the time. So there were two two Catalunya's ladies that they knew we had the cookies there, and they were the ones that ate most of our cookies when we weren't there, because those were underneath it. Oh, dear, dear, dear.
So you all had to sleep in one big room.
Oh, yes.
Right? Men and women?
Well, the men had their own department.
Their own.
And the women, you know, separate.
And what about, did you have running water and bathroom facilities in that big
room? Are you kidding? The ocean. Could you do it? You had no facility there. You wash your face and hands and that's all.
And where did they feed you?
Well, you had to go get it to the dining room, to the kitchen, rather. Yeah. You had to go get your room. My sister and I usually went after. My mother's, we had some chairs that you open up and you take with you underneath it at night, because otherwise you won't find them there in the morning. Somebody would take them on you. Okay. And my sister and I would go and get the food for the three of us. Yeah.
What kind of food did they give you?
The food wasn't bad. Yeah, fish. And I love fish anyway. Yeah. So we ate a lot of fish. We enjoyed the food that they gave us. The food was all right.
Now, you said that you and your mother got seasick.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, you get so sick, dear God. You feel like throwing up. Forgive me.
The okay.
Expression.
It's true.
My sister didn't get sick. She was a tomboy. But she didn't get sick. She was running up and down those stairs like mad. Sliding on the rail. I said, one of these times you're going to land in the ocean. No, she never did.
I'm going to fix your microphone again.
Oh.
It's the puffy part of
Wait
your
a minute.
Sleeve is.
It's my, no. It's my big neckline.
Well, and you know, it's the microphone is pulling it down is what's happening.
It's not that heavy.
No, it isn't, but it's heavy enough, I think, that it's doing that. Let me just run the mic.
Maybe
okay.
That's because I'm the way I'm.
Well, we'll see how we do with this. Did they try to treat your seasickness in any way?
No. No, nobody does anything for you. Not in third class like we were. And that's why my mother was so mad, because she says, we could have come in preferencia. And she says, we had the money. My mother landed here with, I don't know how much money. You had had so much money to land here. But my mother had more than double the money. And that's why she said to my father, we could have come in tercera preferencia instead of just board ship.
Did you see any other passengers who were a type of person that you had never seen before?
Oh, a lot of them. A lot of them. Third class passengers.
The others,
they don't mix with you because they're high toned, you know. I mean, no, the others, they don't bother with you.
How long did the ship take to get to New York?
I think it was 7 days and a half.
Did it stop anywhere else?
No.
Along it went from Cadiz to
no,
New York.
No. No, it didn't stop anywhere. Straight into New York.
And this is October, right?
October
of 1916.
Yeah.
Now, what about? Of course, this is World War I. You know,
yeah.
During that time, do you remember there being safety drills?
Yes.
On the ship.
No, not on ours. Not on ours. This was a passenger boat. That was all. And they used to say, well, maybe some other minds don't get in your way. My father used to say, it's possible, but I don't think so.
Well, it happened sometimes. Some of the passenger boats were sunk. Yeah.
I guess we were lucky.
You were lucky.
We had five priests in the family. They were praying for us.
That's right. Well, what's the first thing that you remember about when the ship comes into to land?
Well, the first thing I knew that I saw the Statue of Liberty to the left of us. And coming into the harbor, I could see the tall, what was the tallest building in New York, that Empire State Building?
Well, no, that'd be later. Let's see, 1916, the Woolworths Building, was that
built? I think so.
Time?
It was one of these high buildings.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that as we landed in New York. And then I can't tell you much about anything else. I wasn't impressed with the port.
Well, you said that the ship docked and
yeah.
had lunch or something on the
yes,
ship.
Yes, we had lunch. A warship.
How come they didn't let you off the ship?
Because Ellis Island wasn't open until 1 o'clock, I think it was. So they fed us before we went over there. Only the third class went over there, like we were.
Where did the other ones go?
Straight where they were going. They got out of ship, and they got on whatever train or whatever.
Were you allowed to walk around on the ship while you were
yes.
being held on it?
Yes.
Did you see anything on the ship that you hadn't seen before during the crossing?
No, the ocean. Some of these, we were pretty lucky because this month of October and September, the ocean is pretty calm. At least that's what we were told. But there were a couple of days when the ship was pretty rocky. They were going in, up and down, up and down.
Was there a storm that you can remember?
No, but I can't describe it. It was the ocean, the waves.
The rocking of the boat.
Oh, yes. Up and down, up and down, this way. Not sideways, but frontways.
Now, how did you get, when the ship docked in New York, now how did you get to Ellis Island?
By another ship.
Another little boat.
Yeah, another little boat. Yeah.
And do you remember doing that, coming
yes.
over? Yeah. And then you said a little bit earlier, when you got to Ellis Island, it was closed.
Yeah, it was closed.
So tell me again what happened.
They opened up at 1 o'clock, and we got there a little after 12 because we had lunch aboard ship. But then right after, they put us on this boat, and we went right over there. So we land there, and we got up the boat, and we sat on the steps. By the three doors, I can tell you, I can show you.
That's okay. Just describe
it's over
in
there.
Words. Yeah.
And we enter into the middle door, the stairs where there was nothing in there like it is now. They were just plain stairs, and they were closed yet because they opened at 1 o'clock. And as the doors opened, we went in, you know, gradually. Not rushing or anything. Yeah.
And what happened while you were there?
We went in there. There were two men, two Spanish men. They came to my mother, my sister, and I. And my mother was questioned first, and then my sister, and then me. And my sister went right through the question fine. But when it came to me, they wanted to know if I could read and write in Spanish. And I said, yes, I can read and write in Spanish. And then they said, ¿cuántos son dos y dos? Cuatro. Cuatro y cuatro, ocho. Ocho y ocho, 16. 16 y 16, 32. Okay. When it got to 64, I started to cry. So they went and we had on a very pretty blue, light blue dress. And one of the guards put a mark, white cross on my arm. And I started to cry. And I thought they were going to send me back. Because we were, you know, told that if we didn't answer the question right, we were going to be shipped back. I said, oh, they're going to ship me back alone. I couldn't see that. I started to cry. It wasn't that at all. They only made the mark to let me go. And that's all I can think of and remember. Then we went up on the second floor, and in there we were sitting on a bench, and my mother says, "And what are we doing here? We're not doing anything in here." And she kept going over to the desk with to some men in there, and she says, "¿Y qué hacemos aquí nosotros? No, tenemos que ir a Massachusetts." Y decía, la nombre que le decía, le hacen falta tres. You know what it was? Our lunch. To come to Springfield, so we wouldn't go hungry. But the lunch wasn't there yet. They had to wait. And that's how we were detained in there. And there was that.
So they were holding you while they were making your lunch for you. And your mother was all nervous.
Sure. If we got to Springfield.
How did you, what do you remember about getting, they gave you your lunch, I assume, mm-hmm. yes, and then came off the island? Or did anything else happen that you can
they
remember?
They took us to the train.
Did you see anything at Ellis Island that you had never seen before?
It was full of people when we got there, all sitting on benches, different nationalities, I don't know, but to us they spoke correctly Spanish. So they had must have had all different nationalities in there, because it was all kinds of people in there. Not only our ship, but how many ships, I don't know, because there were a lot of people in there. Yeah. And this guard that they were there, they were very polite and very, very well-educated, you could tell.
And because of the type of Spanish that they spoke? Or
yes. They spoke very perfect Spanish. And they were very well organized and everything. Yes. They were good-looking fellows, too. Yes, they were. I don't know whether they were Spanish or English or what they were, but they spoke Spanish correctly. Very perfect.
Do you remember how you got back to the train station?
Yes. I remember going to the, coming out of Ellis Island, and we got aboard another ship, and they took us to the station. And there we went up, I think it was one flight of stairs, to the railroad. They put us on a train, and from there on to Springfield. That was it. In Springfield, my father, my brother, and this German lady that was could speak Spanish correctly. She spoke German, Spanish, and English correctly. And they were waiting for us at the railroad station in Springfield. And I remember my brother was, he spied us on, you know, the train. We were standing already. Pa, aquí están, aquí están. We got off the train, and that was it. I got off the train and we came, got on the bus, went to Springfield, the railroad. It wasn't a bus at the time. It was, what was it that they had?
Like a streetcar?
A streetcar.
Yeah, a streetcar.
Right.
Tell me what it was like to see your father after not having seen him for 6 months.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Did he bring you a present when he came to meet you?
No. No. The person was at home. Yeah. He had come to live in here, to 127 North Elm Street.
Here in Westfield.
Yes. And the house was sold. Furnished and everything. Yeah, we all had our own separate room. My mother had her own room. We had our own bedroom. My sister and I, my brother had another one. And there was one Cuban man that was staying with my father at the time at the house. And he slept with my brother in my brother's cell. Yeah. That was it.
Tell me.
What more do you want to know? I think I got my whole history there.
Well, we have to talk a little bit about what happened in America.
Well, I tell you, I started to go to school in the first grade.
Yes, tell me about that.
I was a big girl, bigger than I am today because I shrunk already. I was so ashamed to be in their room with all the small girls, with all the small children. My brother, my sister, and I, the three of us in the same grade. There was one Spanish girl in there who was all Salvation because she spoke both languages, and she was an interpreter for all the three of us. Yeah. Teresa Herrera was her name.
Teresa what?
Herrera.
Herrera.
Yeah.
Huh.
With the age.
Which, do you know if she was born in Spain or was she?
No, she was born in here.
Yeah.
She was born here.
Tell me about your teacher.
Stack with her. She was a wonderful teacher. The three of us was in their room, and the eighth grade teacher used to come down to the, into her room once in a great while. And they used to say to me, next year you're going to go upstairs with her, with the eighth grade teacher. It would never be. How could I? I couldn't speak the English or read the English the way I was supposed to. But anyway, they were trying to make it easier for me. They were very kind.
Do you remember some of the first words that you learned in English?
Yes. Some of the first words that I learned to read in English was, rain, rain, come away, come again some other day. I never forgot those words because they were the very first thing that I learned.
What was a difficult part of that process? The hardest part of learning English for you?
To speak, yeah.
And in what ways was that difficult?
I can't describe it. Your tongue seemed to be all twisted up inside. You couldn't pronounce the words. It was hard.
What about your mother? Did she attempt to learn English?
She tried it, but my mother was very slow. She was very, very slow. My sister and my brother, they learned much quicker than I did, especially my sister, the devils. She could learn anything much faster than I. Being small makes a difference.
Well, yeah, being younger.
Yeah,
sure.
Being younger makes a difference.
And how well did your father speak English by that point?
Well, I'll tell you, he had a little dictionary this big. And he thought he could understand a lot of things and pronounce a lot of things. When he came here, he found that he couldn't even use the book. Because the way you pronounce it and the way it is two different things. And he couldn't use his little dictionary. So he got along the best way he knew how.
What other nationalities worked with him at the foundry?
Oh, God, all kinds. Polish, Americans, Irish, all kinds, Italians, all kinds. And he used to say, Pucha. In Argentina, where I was, I couldn't have my hands dirty because I would dirty the work. In here, the dirty work dirties my hands. Even if they're clean, the minute I touch anything in here, I'm dirty. He couldn't get over.
Do you know what his job was specifically in the foundry? What he did exactly?
He was in the room where they filed the radiators.
Filing the metal down,
yeah.
Somehow?
Smooth them down.
That was his job?
It was his job.
Do you remember what he made? What he got paid?
No. That I can tell.
Did he keep that same job?
Yes, he did. And then he went to work for up in a diner in Springfield. And there he was washing the dishes. Yeah.
Do you remember why he left the job at the foundry?
Because he didn't like the dirty hands.
Well, now his hands would be clean all the time if he's washing dishes. Now, you turned 14 about a month after you got here.
I was 14 in November.
Do you remember anything about that birthday?
No. No, I don't know.
And were you expected to get a job sometime soon?
I did get a job here in the factory over here.
In the foundry?
No. that building over here. They call it a textile.
Oh, the what's now called the Torrington Mills.
Right.
It's all fixed up.
Yeah. How old it's all
you?
Different.
Yeah, right.
It was a dirty job. I was washing the pieces that they made for the caskets. They had to use pumice to scour them and make the design that they wanted to be made. And all I did was to wash them. And they used some kind of soap, then my hands were always spotted. Yeah, it took an awful long time before my hands became normal again.
Are you talking about the fabric that's inside the casket? What?
No, the handles, honey.
Oh, the handles. Oh,
the
I
handles.
See. And you were washing them with a pumice. Really?
And some kind of a soap that it was very hard on your hands. Nobody liked the job. But me, I couldn't speak English. I had to take what they gave me.
How old were you when you took the job?
I think I was 15, because when I came here, I told my father, when you set me down at the city hall, I says, make me a year older. My father did. I says, I want to go to work. I don't want to go to school. I says, I don't learn anything in school. I want to go to school.
How long did you stay
to work.
In school?
I stayed in school 1 year. And the next year I went to work.
And do you remember how you got the job at the factory?
Yeah, through a man. The one that his wife went with my father and my brother to meet us at the railroad in Springfield.
This was the German?
That German.
Yeah.
A lady that spoke the three languages. She even spoke Jewish. Yeah, she could understand Jewish. Very smart lady.
Do you remember how much you got paid for that job?
Yes, $14.50, which it was more than we're paying any other one that was had working there before. But me, like a fool, they gave you a slip every Friday before we were working Saturdays half a day. Okay, they gave you a piece of paper, and the girls that they work in there, they were suspicious that they were going to pay me more than they got when they started there themselves. And they did, because I had nobody to talk to, so I couldn't lose any time. And so they gave you this paper the day before so that you know how much you're getting. You have to sign in, then when they give you your envelope, you turn in your paper. And one of these ladies, her name is, I can't think of her name right now. She asked me if I show my slip. Me, innocently, I said, sure. I showed her. And she knew that I was paying almost like what they were paying them. And they had worked there for so much longer. So she alerted all the others. And then this Spanish man came to me and said, you were foolish to show them your slip, because now you made it hard on yourself, honey. I was innocent. I was faithful, Nanda.
And the 14, you said $14.50, was that per week?
A week.
Per week.
A week.
And that's 5 full days and 1 half day. Oh.
It's half a day Saturday.
How long did you work there?
Not too long, because this couple out in Finney Hills, he was Yankee and she was Cuban. And he was the owner of the whole tobacco farm in Finney Hills.
Oh, in Feeding Hills, yes,
yeah.
Right, tobacco
okay.
farm.
And she was Cuban, and she heard of a Spanish lady, a Spanish girl that was here in Westfield, and she wanted Spanish made for her children in there, because she didn't want them to lose the Spanish. She wanted her children to learn the English and the Spanish at the same time. So therefore, she wanted me to go and be the nurse for her children over there, so they could speak to me in Spanish, or I could teach them the Spanish with them, for the three of them, and at the same time do the job. That's how I got the job over there.
Wow. And what was the family's name?
Smith.
Smith.
Smith. They wanted to take me to Cuba in the wintertime with them. My parents would not let me go. So I went back to Westfield and worked in the brine box.
The brine?
The brine box, which does not exist anymore. It's where the old envelope made an addition into the brine box, because the brine box closed down. And after I was married, that brine box closed down. And they added onto the envelopes. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about working with the children and what your duties were
over there
as
in
a
Feeding
maid
Hills?
In Feeding Hills, yeah.
Oh, they wanted me to speak Spanish to them all the time.
To the children?
To the children, yeah. And at night, when they put them to, after I put them to bed, I could sit in the living room with them. They don't allow that to all of them. But me being Spanish, being different, they knew that I was lonely. I had nobody to talk to, so they had pity on me. And Mr. Smith spoke Spanish correctly. And Herbie and Cuban, which spoke both, were very broken English. I think my English was even better than hers. And mine was very good. But she was a very good-looking lady.
Did you live with them?
6 months.
For 6 months?
6 months. They wanted to take me to Cuba for the winter with them. My parents wouldn't let me go.
Do you remember, say within the first 2 years that you were in this country, do you remember how you felt about being away from Spain?
Yes. I was very lonely. Very lonely. My friends were all out there, especially one friend to this day. I keep thinking of it. We were just like this, the two of us. We would sing together, we would play together the pandereta. You know the
yes, you were telling me about the pandereta.
Okay. Her and I were singing together and playing together and dancing together. We were like this all our lives. When you leave all your roots in there, it's hard to forget.
Did you communicate in any way with her?
No, I did not. No, I did not, and she missed it. She missed it. And I should, but I had a lot of company here. And my time was passing by.
Do you remember what her name was?
Alvina.
Alvina?
Alvina Lopez.
Alvina Lopez, wherever you are now.
She's still there.
She's still living?
Not in Loma, not in my hometown. Her sister was married, older sister, and she took her with her to one of the village in Bilbao, because she went to live there. That's where her husband was working, and Alvina went with him.
Did your mother get a job?
No.
No?
No, she was working at home.
And you mentioned earlier your brother had started washing windows in the foundry.
The foundry.
But what happened after that for him?
Well, they got him a job right in the foundry.
In the foundry.
In the foundry, yeah.
And your sister's young enough where she probably went to school.
Yeah, she was going to school, yeah. I went to night school too, here.
In here in Westfield? Can you talk a little bit about what that experience was like?
It was funny, because it was only 4 months of the year, two days a week, I believe it was. Yeah, and there were a lot of Spanish men in here, and there were no girls, only two girls, another girl and I. And we all wanted to, you know, take you to school and take you back home. They wait for you when you come out of school. And my father wasn't too pleased. But anyway, it went on for a while. And then I got going with my husband.
In night school, how did they try to teach you? What was it that they were trying to get you to learn in night school?
The school, honey. The how to read and write English.
Primarily in English.
No Spanish, only English.
And what about the teacher? Could she speak?
She was Miss, her name was Clark. No, Mark.
Mark.
Miss Mark, Jewish.
Could she speak Spanish?
No.
No.
No. But we understood each other. Yeah, we understood each other.
Well, tell me how you met your husband-to-be.
Oh, he was just a pest.
He was a pest.
Like all the men when they see a girl and they like.
Was he from Spain?
He left Spain when he was 14 years old. He grew up in Cuba.
In Cuba?
Uh-huh. Yeah. From there he came here. Yeah.
And we know his last name was Capo.
Yeah.
What was his first name?
Candido.
Can you spell that?
Yeah, Candido. C-A-N-D-I-D-O.
Candido.
Candido.
Candido Capo. And what part of Spain was he born in?
Asturias. Asturiano. They speak Abable. They don't speak the right Castilian. I'm Castilian, I'm pure Castilian.
And what was he doing in the United States for work?
Working? He was working at Pope.
Pope?
Yeah.
What was Pope?
They were making bicycles. Yeah, the bicycle, the Columbia bicycle. Don't you remember that Columbia bicycle?
Yeah, so they still make them, I think, don't they? Columbia
I don't
bicycle?
Know where. Not in Westfield, is it?
No, probably not, but I think the brand still exists.
I think they still make them, but I don't know where.
Yeah, but that's what he was doing. He was working in a bicycle factory.
Yeah.
And you say he was a pest. What was he doing that was pestering you?
He tried to take me home every time I went to night school.
Was he in the night school too?
No.
Oh.
No. But he would wait for me outside, and my father couldn't see it. Don't take me in. Let me go, will you please?
Okay, all right, you want to go. Have you ever been back to Spain?
Yes, I have been.
How many times?
Twice.
How old were you the first time?
When I went back with my two friends from California, Pilar and Cindo. And then I went back again. And
how old were you the first time you went back?
I was married. I was living here. I said to my husband, come on, let's go with them. And my husband says, no, you go if you want to, but I'm staying. You know why he didn't want to go? Because he came here through Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And he just jumped aboard the ship and he landed in Albany. And he was afraid that if he was going, he wasn't going to be able to come back here.
Right.
And it would have happened to him.
That's right.
It would have happened to him.
Yeah. Well, did you go back to the town that you grew up
no,
in?
No, darn it. I didn't go back to the town, which I regret for all my years after.
Yeah.
I could see it at a distance.
Even what about the second time you went? Did you go back to the town?
No.
No, so you've never actually been back to the... How did you feel when you were in Spain again for the first time?
I could see my town at a distance. I could go. We were going to Santander. We hired a man with a car, my friends and I. And wherever we went, wherever we slept, we paid for his luggage and for his meals and everything. Everything was paid for him. His guests and everything, we paid for everything. And he was just one lucky man. All he had to do was eat and drive us around.
That's right.
We got to Santander, and he stopped to cool off because it was a hot morning, very hot morning. And we were sitting there under the shade. I look across the street, and I said, oh, my God. We're right in front of Fernando and Maria Oreñas, where they live up here, up on the third floor in there. Which second floor in here, because in there the first floor doesn't count, the second, the third, we call it the third here, over there it's called the second. And the driver says, go ahead, go and see him. I says, can we? He says, here, I'll wait for you in here. Sure enough, we got up there, I knock on the door, and his wife had gone out shopping, groceries. I knock on the door, and he says, who's there? I says, Florentina de Westfield. Wow, He opened the door right away. He had eaten in my house every month because my husband and him were the, my husband was the secretary, and he was going out accompanying my husband to collect the monthly bills and gave out the receipts to everybody. And the Fernando Reña was my husband, a helper in the nursing home, because he had been doing it before, but he got tired of doing it because there was no money in it. You had to do it free of charge. And so he didn't want to do it anymore, so he gave the job to my husband. And when I said to him, Florentina de Westfield, he said, oh my God, he opened the door right away.
Florentina of Westfield. Did you, when you were in Spain, did you feel any kind of emotional connection to the country?
Yes, you do. You can't help it but feel it. You can't help it. The people, they are so kind and so down to earth. Down to earth is what I call it. We were in Valencia one night, and I was watching the, oh, what beautiful scene, the sunset over the ocean. It was beautiful, and I was talking to myself, what a beautiful view, I was saying to myself. And a lady was listening to me, and she says to me, ¿Qué dice usted, señora? Oh, señora, estaba hablando yo misma. Me estaba fijando en el agua y el sol, lo bonito que hace en el agua, el resplandor del sol. Y dice, sí, señora, se lo creo. Dice, es muy bonito. Yeah, and we were talking for quite a while in there, the two of us. And she says to me, you're so kind, because there's so many that come from America here, and they think that the cats meow, she says. Just because they speak a little English, they don't get to speak Spanish anymore. I said, señora, es una burrada, una cosa muy tonta, le dije yo. Es una burrada, le dije yo. Dice, señora, tiene usted razón. She says to me, you're right, lady. Says you're down to earth, says to me.
When you think of yourself in terms of nationality, how do you think of yourself?
Right now I feel myself as an American. I'm an American citizen. I became a citizen after. I had no trouble with anybody. I get along with everybody. Even at the center where I go every 2 days a week, I get along with everyone.
Talking about the Senior Citizen Center here in town, yes.
Yeah. My friend Rena, she doesn't like this, but she doesn't like this. I said, Rena, get along with everyone. We're all the same. We're all equal.
Someone might be listening to this tape 200 years from now.
Oh, God.
What kind of advice would you have to a young person who might be listening to this tape many years in the future about how to live a long and happy life?
Be yourself. Don't try to be anybody else, but be yourself. Down to earth is the best kind of living that you can do. The best kind of friendship and relation you can have with anyone. That's the way I look at it. Get along with everyone. We all have faults. I have my faults. You have your faults. Everybody has a fault somewhere. Try to get along with everyone, because that's the way God made us. We had nothing to do with us. God made us all.
Good. This Capo, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We've been talking for 2 hours now.
Oh, God.
And it really
I didn't know I could talk so much.
Well, it's my pleasure. As I said before we did the interview, we just don't find people who came from Spain very often, so this has been really wonderful. This is Paul Segrist signing off with Florence Capo on the 4th of July, a very hot, muggy Sunday afternoon, 1999, here in Westfield, Massachusetts. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, honey.